Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today on the show, I'm joined by filmmaker David Hooper. His new film, The Anatomy of a Great Deception, will be released this coming September. It's a film about his 2011 awakening and investigation into 9/11 and its impact on his life. David Hooper, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks a lot, Cheryl. Appreciate you having me.
On your website, The Anatomy of a Great Deception, it says that you began looking into 9/11 in February of 2011 based on an innocent question about 9/11. Could you share with us what that innocent question was?
Yeah, I was with my wife, who was pregnant with child number 4, and a video clip came on a mainstream news channel. I don't remember if it was ABC or CNN or whatever it might have been. And it was in February of 2011, and it was in preparation for the upcoming 10-year anniversary of 9/11. And they just showed a clip, we've all seen it before, of George Bush in the Sarasota classroom as the attacks were unfolding. And I don't know why this one stuck with me 10 years later or why I suddenly cared, but I cared enough to Google, why was the Secret Service still there? That one question, that is why the Secret Service let Bush remain in that classroom while there were as many as they didn't know, supposedly, as many as a dozen planes hijacked that morning. Why would they break their protocol? They planned for days that are specifically characterized by what was happening on unpredictable days of national tragedy. They trained for this. How could they all either have ignored their training or more likely were told not to carry out what I would think is the number one function of their job. That just got me thinking. It got me just to look deep enough to ask another question and another question. And it's not like I thought there was some government conspiracy when I, you know, after I looked for the answer to the Secret Service. It took a while before I started to see that all these little discrepancies, that they weren't random accidents. They were kind of better characterized as mistakes in the plan, if you ask me. And they left a lot of clues, a lot of mistakes. They're not perfect, but the evidence that something else happened on 9/11 is, I mean, it's startling. I think that's why half the nation no longer believes the official story. But that's how it got started for me. It was February of 2011, and it really just was a research obsession for the first roughly year.
Were you shocked at what you discovered?
Heck, yes. I mean, it changed my life. Some people look at this information, and I'm still trying to understand this. Some people look at it and shrug, or most people that see the film or have seen it, it is connected with them, as far as I can tell. A lot of them circle back to me over time. But a lot of them also just shrug it off and just, I think there's an attitude of, what can I do? It's too big for me. And they, you know, just go on living their lives and hope. But I was absolutely in shock. I mean, it was, in the beginning, I was up late at night, every night, going through, just reading documents, watching interviews, watching clips, testimonies, you name it. And my jaw was on the floor. My hand was over my mouth. I mean, it was like I was watching a slow unfolding car accident. And I couldn't peel myself away from it. My heart was racing. I was anxious and nervous. It felt like I was reading my girlfriend's diary, and I'm sitting here reading about how she's in love with another man. I don't know how to explain it, but it was not easy.
There's a betrayal there, for sure. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. As you were going through this, I'm assuming you were talking to perhaps your wife or friends, and how were they reacting to you with this new information?
I would say of the first 100 people I spoke to about this, and I'm a wear my heart on my sleeve kind of guy, I would say of the first 100, I probably ran across 4 or 5 people in my circles. And granted, my circles are less conducive to understanding something like this because it's a more indoctrinated crowd. I was in it, so I understand it. Most of my friends are PhDs, masters, judges, doctors, businessmen, you know, they've been in a formal educational setting much longer. So I don't know if those statistics are very representative of the whole country. As a quick sidebar, I since entered, let's call it, the creative community with this movie, and I would say in that community it's flipped, where it's almost 9 out of 10 people know 9/11 was a false flag operation, and it's not an earth-shattering find. It's just sort of something they've lived with. But most of them resisted me. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't believe it. They dismissed it at the point of even a possibility. It's the old, there's a speaker I like a lot. His name is Chuck Missler. I don't know if he coined this, but he alerted me to it, and that is the concept of condemnation before investigation.
Yes.
I understand. That's something I was very guilty of my whole life, just thinking I know everything and I'm walking around like, you know, I'm something special because I think I've got a good education or whatever, only to find out later I was further away from knowledge because my head was filled with things that a lot of them just weren't true. And a lot of my belief system was based on things that I was able to ultimately prove, to myself at least, prove without a shadow of a doubt were impossible, things that were cornerstones of my belief system. As I discovered these things, and this research went way beyond 9/11, 9/11 was the first 8 months of it before I had a really good understanding, I thought, of what happened. But
so it led you sort of down the rabbit hole to other issues, it sounded like?
Yeah, it did. And I personally came to believe that there is organized evil on this planet. It's not accidental, and it's not in the form of a greedy politician working on his own. I personally believe that evil is very real, as in the kind that they speak about in the Bible. It is organized. It's been around a long while. And if you can't even understand that, I think you'll have a hard time understanding the full scope of 9/11. I personally believe there was a spiritual element to that. 9/11 for me is a big battle in a massive spiritual war, one that is, by and large, unseen and unnoticed by the general population. But if you want to know what we're really in the middle of, 9/11 is a great place to start. Study it. Study it on your own. Use your own eyes, your own head, your own logic. Don't listen to what other people tell you. Just because some guy's dressed up on the 6 o'clock news doesn't mean he is more credible than an independent news guy who doesn't wear a tie, who is reporting from the street. Two very different stories you get, and when you start to see enough of it, it becomes easy to pick out what's true and what's not. It's kind of like going to a country. When you first get there, you don't get the currency. It's easy to slip a counterfeit bill into your wallet. But once you've been there a month, it's not as easy. It's like doing a puzzle. When you first look at it, it's just a confusing mass of pieces. But after you stare at it a while, even if you haven't put any of it together, you at least know where some of the pieces belong, what general area. Same thing is true for 9/11. If anyone takes the time to look into it, you know, right now the Internet is a library. It is the largest library in human history. It's oftentimes dismissed because there's some bad information on there, which is true. That's been the truth for all libraries throughout history. But you don't throw out the bath water with the bath, or the bath with the bath, whatever that saying is. And if you are willing to do the research, you can find out anything. I can find out about Colombian coffee production last month, or the specs to my neighbor's house. You know, and I can also find out what insiders at the Central Intelligence Agency and our military and our politicians had to say about 9/11, things that we never saw on the 6 o'clock news. And, you know, one or two of those stories might be an aberration. But when you find 1,000 of them, and they're all painting a very different picture, and there's only one source painting a picture that you've now seen enough to know that it is false, that's what begins to open your eyes a little bit. It was that process of waking up. For me, it was very uncomfortable. It lasted a while, and it took a while to settle back down, get back into a regular life with basically new eyesight, a new set of vision. And it changed me as a person. And my goal is not to disrupt anyone's life in that way. But, you know, sometimes, going back to the betrayal example, I guess it depends what kind of friend you are. If you have a friend, a girlfriend, Cheryl, let's say that you know or the town knows your girlfriend's spouse is cheating on her, Are you the type of friend that is going to confront her and give her the news, or are you the type of friend that won't bring it up because you don't want to disturb her? I'm not making judgments about what's right or wrong, but I'm probably more in the category of, you know, if your fly is down, probably going to say something, even if it embarrasses you a little bit right now, instead of you being more embarrassed down the road, if that...
Right. You can't take charge of your life or do anything about it if you don't have the truth.
How did you stumble on all of this?
Oh, friends kept telling me back in 2002 that we were being lied to and that it looked like an inside job, and I thought they were crazy, but then I started doing the research, as you mentioned, and realized that they were onto something. And then the lesson that I got out of that is similar to what you said, is that you realize that what you're being told in the corporate media every day is not true, and you see how on point all the different stations are. And as you said, then you get to be able to tell when they're telling the truth and when they're not, or at least have great suspicions. And now I just don't believe anything they say. I question everything. But getting back to the movie that you made, what motivated you to make this film, The Anatomy of a Great Deception?
Well, this started as just a personal investigation, my own, for my own edification. I just wanted to understand a little bit more about this one event, not even knowing this went into... that the patterns I were finding and the deception that was involved in this event are chronic, and they are pervasive, and they're global. Long before I discovered any of that, I was still in shock about just the fact that this one event that I was so certain were terrorists that paved the way for a war we're still fighting and for freedoms we gave up to fight this quote-unquote war. That's where I was when I started looking into this. I mean, I was one of the guys that was cheering George Bush when he talked about sending our military into Iraq. I'm ashamed of that today because that's a whole other sidebar. To answer your question, even though I lived in a home with my wife, we'd been together for probably a year or two, with my having this information in my head and my not being able to convey it to her. It didn't matter this is my wife we're talking about. Now, the same thing happened with my sister and my mom and many of my friends. They've always known me throughout my life as a sane, credible, put-together type of person. So I might have had a little bit in my emotional bank account before they started really teasing me, saying that I'm a tinfoil hat-wearing crazy man. Jokes aside about that, I was unable to get my wife to see it, to understand it, to even consider it. In fact, the first time she did any sort of research after one of our conversations, her first research was into, you know, what do I do when my husband is going crazy? So that's the sort of resistance it started off with. And flash forward to a year or two later, we're in the same household and our belief systems are diverging in incredible diametrically 180 degrees away from each other. And I was losing my marriage, losing my friends, and only because of that was I then in a place where I was starting to lose my sanity, because this was part of the ground just falling out from beneath you. And the catalyst moment was I went out to dinner with a friend of mine, Jim, from my hometown, one of the smarter guys I know, successful businessman, and I discussed with him specifically about Building 7. The one building that I think anyone that's looked into 9/11 can tell you is the smoking gun of the event. There's 50 smoking guns, but that might be the best one. And I was excited because after dinner, he said he was going to look into it. And he, a week later, I had a party at his home, and I went to his home. And you know, he welcomed me by saying, "Hooper, I love you, but you're crazy. I read into this, and I found out there are a lot of crazy guys like you that are talking about this." So what I came to realize is Jim got as far as to get to a debunking website, and it sounds like maybe the first or second one, said something that allowed him to just shelve this, not have to look into it. We got into a senseless, playful argument. His one response to all of my serious scientific questions was, you're crazy, it's impossible, the government couldn't do it, you're crazy. And I walked out of there very upset. Because if I can't get a lifelong friend of mine to even look into this, and I've had no luck with my wife trying to sit her down and get her to watch the right clips or get enough information for the light bulb to go off. The week after the dinner with Jim is the first time I sat down and began to arrange all this raw material that I've been downloading for 2 years. not knowing I was going to ever make a movie, not even knowing why I was downloading it. And I just started, because everything that meant something to me, luckily, I downloaded beginning right when my research began. And so I went and just reconstructed my awakening through research. The movie begins with a clip of Bush in the classroom. And I walk everybody through, not my full awakening, but through most of 9/11. I mean, I didn't even finish 9/11 in the film because I didn't want to overburden the people I was showing this to, which is, frankly, I was only making this for my wife, my friend Jim, a few other friends, my sister, and my mother. And as the film was nearing completion, I started bringing them over, and we started doing screenings. And on one of the first screenings was my mom, Betsy, and her mom, inner family. This was actually probably broken up over a couple of screenings. Bottom line is, three of my biggest resistors literally converted almost on the spot. They began saying, holy, they got quiet afterward. They started doing their own thinking. They started doing their own research. They started to tell people about it. Word of mouth began to spread. You know, people like my friend Jim, he came back, saw a screening of the film, and he was laughing with me because this was just a few months ago, and he's like, you know, Hooper, I totally understand where you were a few years ago because I'm sitting here calling you crazy a few years ago. Now I'm the guy at the party saying, no, you guys need to look into 9/11. You need to see this movie. You're jumping to conclusions. He's literally in the same shoes I was and recognizes how frustrating it is.
Yeah, that's a great story.
So just to tie it up really quickly, along the way, I just realized there are probably millions of people. Maybe you're even one of them that have, you know, you wake up and how do you deal with the people in your life that are not awake? I mean, you either have to accept a reduced level of intimacy in that relationship, or you've got to wake them up some way, or the relationship ends. I mean, there's only a few choices. And so I really made that movie to save my marriage and just save my life. And I live in a small town, and it was the prospect of being the town conspiracy guy was not appealing to me because that is not how I would characterize what I had discovered.
Right.
So we put it into a film. I brought all my friends down. We rented this little room at the casino here in Detroit, had a nice little party for about 100 people. Roughly 80% of them had never heard of a controversy surrounding 9/11. I asked at the beginning who here has any doubts about the official story. 20 people raised their hand. 80 had no doubts. And so I was really curious to see what kind of reaction that would have on the crowd. But I actually thought I was going to be done with the film, dust my hands off, and go get a regular job afterward. And as soon as it ended, the feedback from the audience, people in my hometown, police officers, local politicians, people that were at this screening, started talking to me about how their eyes had been opened. They couldn't believe it. They're now doing their own research.
I'm very excited about seeing it. I understand Richard Gage has endorsed it and that it's going to be released in September this year around the anniversary. And it's very exciting for the 9/11 Truth Movement to have a new movie or film come out because it's been 13 years and you sound like you have a new fresh angle on it and it sounds like it's been really successful, so I'm looking forward to that. Maybe you could tell us a bit about the process of releasing it and how people could get a copy.
Sure. My life has been as a businessman, so I tend to not speak so much as a passionate artist. My wheelhouse is the business end of this, so I might mention some terms that sound businessy, but that's okay because there is a business behind this movie, and I think it's one of the two big value propositions of it is the way it's going to be distributed. So obviously this isn't the first 9/11 movie. There have been many others. I'm sure we've, between us, probably seen them all. They're similar. They're typically a laundry list of facts and evidence which are compelling in and of themselves, but I've always felt they left the viewer with this feeling of, well, what the hell am I supposed to do with this information? You know, when I'm all angry now, and the filmmaker was angry, obviously, with me, too, for not knowing this, and I didn't feel like it was an effective way to introduce such a controversial subject. So that's piece number one, is this film does get personal. I mean, I discuss things that were very personal happening in my life. You know, I get emails every day where people are talking to me about, oh my gosh, the same thing happened in my life. And I couldn't even talk to my therapist about it. I mean, I know there are people that need to be validated by this movie, maybe inside of their own personal circle. So that's piece one. The business side is, ironically, my prior business was one of selling DVDs and CDs and books and games. We had a warehouse in Chicago, and at our peak, we were shipping 3,000-4,000 movies a day. Now, we were selling across a massive inventory of films that included several million different SKUs or titles. In this case, we're only selling one title. We're very familiar with the gatekeepers, the major film distributors. We understand how they operate and how the mechanisms at work and the policies at work actually keep thought-provoking movies out of circulation. And we decided to figure out a way to get around those gatekeepers. So the film will be released through the most conventional methods. You'll find it online as a DVD. You'll be able to digitally download it. The thing that I'm personally most excited about is the street release in the city of Detroit. So as we speak, we've got people right now, they're going into retail locations over the city. And by the time we're done, this film will be propped up for sale near the cash register in nice displays, elegant, sleek, curiosity-inducing displays, if you follow me.
That's great, yeah.
In the impulse buy checkout area of a retail store. And it can be any kind of retail store. It doesn't matter. 7-Elevens and convenience stores are naturals, video stores, obviously. As long as it has a cash register, it's a viable micro-distributor, micro-channel for this film. We've even walked into women's boutiques, and solely on the fact that this is a 9-11 film from a local filmmaker, we've tested this concept now plenty of times. That's been our worst response, which is, all right, you can put 10 DVDs on my counter. I'll help you sell them. So the goal is to get into about 2,000 retail locations in the city of Detroit, the whole metro area. That in-store marketing in those retail locations are going to drive people to the website, to our theater schedule, and to the opening launch party, which is on September 5th in the city of Detroit. And the cumulative effect of those couple thousand retail locations, it's going to bring or essentially generate several million impressions on the population of the metro area here about the film. So the idea is, by the time we hit late August, it should be difficult to get home in Detroit without hearing this on the radio, get a coffee, you saw something on your way home, you went to your dry cleaner, you saw something. My intention is that people hope there's like, okay, there's a reason I keep seeing this movie, I'm supposed to get it. And if that concept works in Detroit, then we are going to continue releasing the film in a city-by-city pattern until something speeds us up or something stops us.
Wow, that's fantastic. And if someone wants to go to your party on September 5th, can they do that?
Absolutely. There's a few ways to do it. I will tell you my favorite way right now that's probably the best value that someone's going to get, and then I'll tell you the more conventional way. So putting this movie together over 3 years, I did not have a regular job. I basically did this, lived off my savings. And so in order for us to have pulled this off, we needed to raise some money. And we've got an Indiegogo campaign. It's a website that artists, creative projects can go to get funded by large pools of people that are looking to fund projects typically out of passion. And we're trying to raise $50,000 through our Indiegogo campaign. So if anyone's interested in helping, the name of this movie is a little too long. I'll do better on that next time. But if you go to Indiegogo.com, and it's I-N-D-I-E-Go-Go, Indiegogo as an independent film go-go, Indiegogo.com, and search for The Anatomy of a Great Deception, you'll pop up onto our funding page. And there are a number of packages where we're either giving away tickets to the event, DVDs, bulk DVDs for people that want to resell them, T-shirts, posters, things of that nature, in exchange for pledges or donations to help get the film off the ground. And they start as little as $2, and they go up to $5,000, which actually includes a cameo in the film and the home screening by me and a few other of the stars in the movie at the home of whoever would purchase that package. So we've been able to raise, I think we're at about 65% of our goal. We're in the low 30,000s. And we've got about 15 days to go, and we really need to get to that 50,000 if we're going to do a proper experiment in distribution with Detroit. And the reason I think it's critical is if this works in Detroit, we will be able to have a self-funding, let's call it a self-funding awareness-generating machine that will continue operating and feed organizations like architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth will be able to bring people that never would have known about them and bring donation money to them that they never would have seen as a byproduct of releasing this film.
Yeah, this is very exciting, and I'm really thrilled that you're doing it. We're going to be showing the film here on September 11th at the University of Hartford, and more information will follow on that in future broadcasts. But we're just about out of time, David. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners before we pause?
No, other than you guys listening are in good hands with Cheryl. We need more people, Cheryl, doing what you're doing. And if everyone just did a little something that even just woke up their neighbor, first of all, you have to understand there are even bad guys out there, but they have no chance of winning if we are aware of what they're doing. No chance. And that is why this is a war literally of beliefs, just as was predicted thousands of years ago. And I cannot emphasize how important that is. And I think if you have children or just care about this world, it is something that we all should look into, at least to become aware of it. Whether we become active in it or not, that's another story. But I personally appreciate what you do and what you've been doing, and I think our world needs more people like you. So.
Oh, well, thanks, David. And thanks for making the movie The Anatomy of a Great Deception. And thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you, Cheryl.
You've just been listening to an interview with David Hooper, the producer of the soon-to-be-released film called The Anatomy of a Great Deception, which is about his personal experience in waking up to 9/11 and more issues as he investigated his way down the rabbit hole. And as I mentioned previously, we'll be showing the film on Thursday, September 11th at the University of Hartford in the Auerbach Auditorium at 7 p.m. So mark your calendars and round up those resistant friends and family members and bring them out to see The Anatomy of a Great Deception. And again, that's on Thursday, September 11th at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. If you want to learn more about the film and see a trailer, the website is theanatomyofagreatdeception.com. I also want to remind people that the high-rise safety ballot initiative in New York City is going strong. They've already submitted 67,000 signatures to the New York City Council and are in the process of collecting 33,000 more to ensure that if the City Council fails to take action on the petition or votes it down, which the mayor and City Council speaker are pushing for, the proposal will be placed on the ballot regardless of what the mayor or City Council say. The initiative is getting lots of press in the last few days, with the mayor publicly speaking out against it. To learn more, their website is highrisesafetynyc.org. And again, that's highrisesafetynyc.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.